Thank you, colleagues. I think we need to then deal with the apologies. Yes, Honorable Kebekulu, you will be standing in for Princess Angela Buthelezi this evening. Yes, she's unwell, and she'll send the apologies. I think we appreciate your coming, Honorable Kebekulu. Honorable Minister Dr. Nkosazana Zuma is unfortunately unable to honor this meeting due to prior arrangements, commitments. The Deputy Minister will not attend the meeting tonight. The reason is due to the oversight with the Deputy President Mahuza in the Free State. But I'd seen him, it means he was trying to log in while he was in the Free State. And then we have the following list of the delegations. From the DTA is the Director General himself, accompanied by DDG Mukhalati and the CFO and the parliamentary support, and including the director and the chief director and the office of the DG, Mr. Mashish. Then in the National House, we were told the names will be confirmed, but from the official side, I see the CEO, Dr. Stoll, is here with us. Mr. Kandela is here. Rali Buhazungu and Faith Ramavoka is here. Then, yes, in the House, the delegation is led by the Deputy Chairperson, Nkosikazi Mhlauli, and Princess Khabo Moroka. Those are the colleagues that will be leading the House. Their Majesties, they are here. Then, yes, that's how it is in terms of our meeting today. I don't have any other apology. Then it means we need to start with our meeting. I've been asked by the Parliamentary Communication Services that we must switch on our videos as and when we speak, because this is a live broadcast to all the parliamentary platforms, including your TV, your Twitter accounts, YouTube, and the rest. So it will be always advisable that colleagues, but for members of parliament who has got connectivity problem, they're able to pick up your pictures from the archives. You will recall, colleagues, let me just first welcome all of you. I think you deserve that break for the last week. As I've indicated, we've asked permission due to the nature of our work to be allowed to work during this constituency period. But we've said, no, colleagues will still do their constituency work, and then we meet in the evenings. I know the program, you have it with yourselves, and then we have to make sure that whatever work, whatever your colleagues said, we need to attend to. We've managed to congest them in this program of ours. Then I want to appreciate your commitment again, to say some of you are very tired now, but still you are here, because here as a committee, we have got a common vision to make sure that our people get the services they are supposed to get. We'll recall, colleague, in our last meeting on the subject of initiation, it took place on the 27th of November 2020, where ourselves, we had input from the Department of Traditional Affairs, the National House of Traditional Leaders, Contra Lesa, and the CRL Rights Commission. This was before the December initiation session. At this time, the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape provinces were keen to have the moratorium on their initiations lifted. This owing to the pressure from traditional communities who were prepared to disregard the regulations and resume the practice in contravention of the law. Government was also, on the other hand, prepared to lift the prohibition on condition that those calling for it would also take responsibility and be held liable should initiate suffer from the harm. I'm informed that the chairperson, Inkosi Mahlangu, of the National House of Traditional Leadership, has just joined the meeting. Welcome, Inkosi Mahlangu, chairperson of the National House. You find us when we're still raising giving the background. And then since then, colleagues, the National Assembly has also since now passed the customary initiation bill, which now awaits the president's assent and promulgation. The purpose of this meeting, therefore, is to take stock of the initiation developments over the December season in the context of the COVID-19 and safety protocols. From the meeting of the 27th of November, 2020, we learned that the National House has established the National Initiation Task Team that includes representatives from the CRL Rights Commission and Contralesser. The team meets biannually before and after the initiation session to assess initiation readiness as well as consider reports on development post the season. From these reports, lessons can be learned and shared with one another. The committee will therefore be privileged to learn from the team as what has been the experience over the December 2020 initiation session and what lessons have been shared. Another issue around that, you remember there had always been cases, so we'll have to check whether there were any fatalities or those who always lose their limbs imputed at some point. So the success story of those December initiations, I think they are very critical with the pros and the cons for that matter. Another objective of tonight's meetings, especially our majesties from the National House of Traditional Leaders, is to assess the state of readiness for the implementation of the initiation bill once enacted and promulgated. The passing of this legislation was a significant milestone as far as closing the gap in the national regulatory framework. However, the key limiter test lies in the effective implementation of the bill's provisions once it becomes law. Now that the legislative process is over, the executive must start to roll up its sleeves and prepare for the implementation. Our role, colleagues, as Parliament does not stop with the conclusion of the legislative process, but continues in respect of monitoring and oversight. We will therefore be continuously engaging all the relevant stakeholders as to be kept abreast of developments in the implementation of this important statute. This is part of the committee resolution emanating from our meeting, colleagues, on the 27th of November. So I want to then welcome you all. The presentation that I have is only from DTA, the department. But I will, before the department could do that, maybe let me get a comment from the chairperson of the National House of the Traditional Leadership on any item that is related to this. And then we'll hand over to the DG Traditional Affairs later to make the presentation. Over to you, National Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening to you, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister Ntate Obepapela, revered members of this committee, our DG and our officials. Thank you for this invite Chair to come and discuss a very important issue that is, or a very important subject within the institution of traditional leadership. Initiation, we know that is very important amongst African communities, and it is a practice that is very sacred to us, and that we believe that we need to hold hands with anybody that is willing to work with us in terms of making sure that our boys go to initiation and come back safe. So it is something that we are all trying to work towards, and I think this meeting today, it is about taking Parliament into confidence in terms of our readiness, and also giving a report on what has happened since we last met last year, where it was before initiation. When we met, it was before we had our December initiation. Members would recall that a decision was taken by the institution that initiation would be suspended during COVID period, and after submissions were made by especially the Eastern Cape as a province that they want to hold initiation, it was agreed with the ministry that the province of the Eastern Cape be allowed to make a submission in terms of looking at risk mitigating measures that they are going to use towards making sure that boys that go to initiation, they go alive and come back alive. And I think we had impressed on the Eastern Cape that our agreement with the minister is that the province that calls for initiation and those that are calling for initiation would have to take responsibility should anything happen in initiation schools. So the Eastern Cape submitted these documents, and yes, they did have initiation that took place in December, and there were fatalities there. Unfortunately, Chair, there were fatalities, but that has prompted many provinces to say that we are still in danger of COVID-19, and they requested that they should not have initiation even this year. After learning from what happened in the Eastern Cape, that as much as there was a risk-adjusted document that was submitted by the Eastern Cape, we still lost lives in the Eastern Cape. But I will not go into detail, Chair, on the presentation, because I think the DG will take us through the presentation that has been prepared by the department, including the House. I was just highlighting on something that I thought would be key, that despite the plans and promises from our colleagues, we unfortunately lost lives during initiation. And I think in terms of the causes of death and all those would hear from the presentation that would be made by the teacher. But would still want to make a further call, Chair, that working with you, would request that we be assisted, that pressure be put on the department so that we can have the directorate that would be responsible for initiation. And I think it's something that we've been saying for quite a number of years, and we are still making that call. We are still making that request. We are hoping that probably during our term, we would finally have that directorate, because I believe that in most cases, we would have deaths because of non-compliance. And the Department of Health only comes in after boys have died. And but as the department and the House, We need to be there from the beginning. We know that there is initiation every year in winter and December. So if we have all this data that we have initiation, and we know what are the challenges. So if we know all that information, then why can't we have a directory that is going to assist us in terms of dealing with these issues of compliance? Because in the main, they are the biggest reason why we would lose lives. So we're hoping that we would have a commitment on that directory that we've always been requesting. Thank you, Chair, for affording me the opportunity to introduce this topic by the Department of Traditional Affairs. Thank you so much. I would request the teacher to take us through.
Thank you so much, Inkosi Mahlangu, Chairperson of the National House of Traditional Leadership. Can we hand over to you, DG of DTA?
Thank you.
DG, DTA.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I'm... am I audible, Chairperson?
Yes, you are.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Chairperson of the National House of Traditional Leaders, the Deputy Chairperson, and other members of the House that are in the meeting tonight, colleagues, the Department of Traditional Affairs and from the National House of Traditional Leaders, good evening. The presentation on is a joint presentation between ourselves and the House. It will be done largely two parts. First part will deal with issues around the practice itself of customary initiation, zooming in developments during the 2020 season, just to update the members of the committee about what happened during that period. I was already highlighting what happened during the last time when discussions took place regarding COVID and the practice of customary initiation. The presentation will also talk about from provinces at this stage in terms of what we're looking at for 2021. And the last part of the presentation will talk legislation, as this already pointed out, and what the government is putting in place to ensure as towards the implementation of legislation. So, Chairperson, we will have the Secretary of the National House dealing with the first part, the same presentation, after which over to our Deputy Director, Meshu Kimuhaladi, to deal with the part on legislation. In the meantime, we could ask the first to assist with the projecting the presentation on the screen. Your permission, Chairperson, I request the first of the House and that they Tole to take members through the first presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. That is Todd, CEO, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the honorable members and members of the National House and colleagues present. Chair, I will request that maybe the colleagues beam the presentation. However, DG has already given an outline of the presentation itself. I'm going to start on slide number 2, which is the purpose of the presentation. That is where I'm going to start. Then I'm going to end with slide 6 or 7. Now, the purpose of this presentation, Chairperson, is to brief the Portfolio Committee on Initiation Matter, which will include the provincial state of readiness for the 2021 winter initiation season and the state of readiness for the implementation of the Customary Initiation Act once enacted, as we already led. On slide two, I'm just that slide two. I'm going to slide three. Now, slide three talks about the background. Now, the background here basically indicates that the initiation, the cultural initiation practice, is done in all provinces, but it differs in terms of seasons. Some provinces do not necessarily do it in winter because it's cold. Some, they do it both in winter and in summer. So while some provinces face serious challenges relating to customary initiation practices, other provinces are doing very well and have best practices on initiation matters. Chair, we need to remember that there are some provinces who have improved on the initiation practice, and they are doing very well when it comes to that. And there are lessons that could be learned from their practices. Places like Limpopo is doing very well. Now, initiation considered a sacred and secret practice, and traditional leader the primary custodian of this practice. We know that culture and custom is the traditional leaders are the custodians thereof. Now, unfortunately, Chairperson, as we have seen in the past years, this cultural practice has been hijacked by bogus practitioners and charlatans who give this revered cultural practice a bad name. Now, we find that there are unscrupulous initiation practices that are taking place throughout, which then results into injuries and deaths of many initiates over years. And the teaching there leaves much to be desired on those unscrupulous and unregistered initiation schools. But then going to slide four, Chair, we are just going to highlight some challenges that are facing the customary initiation itself, noting that some of these challenges are addressed in the Act itself, in the Act once it is enacted. Now, the following are the common challenges that are facing initiation throughout the country. You have the unregistered or illegal schools, including cross-border initiation schools. Now, on the cross-border part, Chairperson, just to explain this a bit, you'll find what children are taken from Gauteng to an initiation school in Limpopo, and while in the initiation school in Limpopo, they are further transferred to Mpumalanga. So it becomes a lot of inter-provincial issue that needed to be addressed. And some, you find that these boys who attend this unregistered initiation school are abducted. And some of these unregistered initiation schools are caused by people who portray themselves as traditional leaders, and yet they are not traditional leaders. They are not recognized by government as traditional leaders. Then you find what there's gangsterism that is going on, especially in the area of Gauteng. That's where you find what you have a lot of gangsterism that's going on there. Bogus and experienced traditional surgeon, non-screening officiates for the health data members. There must be a screening, a pre-medical screening before a person could attend the initiation school. This is done so that if there's any illness that person, the potential initiate has, that illness must be treated accordingly. Now, lack of minimal involvement of parents, traditional leaders, and community members in some areas. In some areas, they just say, oh, there's an initiation school, then go ahead. And those are some of the challenges. The physical abuse of initiates, the poor monitoring of initiation school, poor involvement of key role players, e.g. some traditional leaders. In some areas, traditional leaders stay a little bit back than it's supposed to be, especially those who have not attended, because within the institution, there are traditional leaders who do not practice this culture. But you find some members of the community do practice it. So it becomes difficult for the traditional leader to directly get involved in the whole thing. Sometimes parents don't practice this, but the pressure that a young person has outside for that child to attend the initiation school, and you find with parents are just not involved in everything. And to a certain extent, initiation is now no more a community issue. it becomes a family issue, which is a very serious omission from the cultural perspective. The unwillingness by community to incorporate qualifying medical doctors in customary initiation practice, which then, if such happens on the qualifying medical, the incorporation of qualifying medical doctors, we mean there are those medical doctors who are qualified medically, who have undergone the process of initiation. Those are the medical doctors that we're talking about. We're talking about medical doctors who have not undergone the initiation. They find out there are many injuries. Some injuries are as a result of being physically abused and so on. Deaths of initiates, which is mostly it's a thing that can be prevented. It is something that can be guarded against. Because when a person is dehydrated, obviously it will be an issue of health there. So some of these deaths are as a result of preventable practice. Now, most of the deaths and injuries are prevalent in the Eastern Cape province. Slide 5, Chairperson, talks about the customary initiation practice during 2020. We need to understand, Chairperson, that in 2020, there was a meeting chaired by the Deputy President with traditional leaders, Contra Lesa, National House, Contra Lesa, Khoi and San, CRL Rights Commission on COVID-19 pandemic in relation to cultural initiation practice. Then in that meeting, the institutional traditional leader took a decision to suspend the 2020 winter initiation and traditional leaders and initiation practitioners to abide by the disaster management regulations. You will recall, Chairperson, that at some stage there was an issue of consultation and all of that. Now, the initiation monitoring teams in the different provinces monitored initiation to ensure the closure of illegal or unregistered initiation school. Anyway, during winter last year, there was no initiation school at all, whether you could not be registered because the initiation was stopped in the entire country. Therefore, it became an illegal initiation school. Now, for the first time in many years, and it was history last year in winter, that not a single death that was related to initiation was recorded during the 2020 winter initiation season. Just because it was suspended, there was no initiation. Now, during the 2020 summer initiation season, which is last December, in cultural initiation remained suspended. However, the Eastern Cape province presented a risk-adjusted strategy to Cabinet that allowed the province to conduct initiation in parts of the province. This risk-adjusted strategy was not only from traditional leaders, much as it was coined traditional leaders in Eastern Cape, but it was as well adopted by the province, and it applied in certain parts of Eastern Cape, not the entire Eastern Cape. Now, these hotspots such as Nelson Mandela Bay were excluded. Now, unfortunately, Chairperson, irrespective of the adjusted strategy, 13 initiates lost their lives during 2020 summer initiation season. Now, Chair, quickly jumping to the state of readiness for 2021 winter initiation season. That is next slide number 6, Chairperson. The state of readiness for the 2021 winter initiation season, as provided by the provinces, as follows. The Free State has not yet pronounced on initiation issues coming winter, as they mostly hold summer initiation schools. Remember, Chair, a Free State is very cold. So in most cases, they hold their initiation schools, or their initiation season is that summer. Limpopo province has suspended cultural initiation this coming winter because they feel COVID is there, and therefore they wouldn't want to subject the initiate and the families of the initiate, because when you have initiation, everybody goes there who qualifies. And if any person has that has the virus, there's a potential that many people can be infected. Gauteng is still assessing its state of readiness with different views from different regions on whether initiation should go ahead or not. So there are different views in Gauteng. which we believe would resonate, shall have been resolved. Eastern Cape has stated it will be ready for the winter cultural initiation. I believe the lesson learned from the 13th summer initiation season, where 13 initial person, Eastern Cape shall have judged is and come up with a mechanism to prevent further loss of life. Now, the Western Cape has indicated it will be ready for winter season and is busy doing traditional agents on COVID-19 regulations and developing standard open procedures for the initiation. Remember, Western Cape now does conduct the initiation in that province. We've got different communities that does that. Now, in Mpumalanga, there hasn't been a pronouncement on the province. However, the Tunde Kings have suspended winter initiation on the basis that it is still COVID-related, and therefore the initiation or Ingoma will not be held this winter initiation. Now, KZN, Chairperson, the larger part of KZN practice medical male succession. With the exception of the Sotho groups that are located at Ngqungquthu and the Amaxhosa, which are mostly likely to have initiation, but have not yet pronounced on the state of readiness. So we're still waiting on it, and especially from the Basotho group and the Amaxhosa, are they going to have a winter initiation this year? Now, Northwest has also not taken a decision on whether winter initiation will be ahead or not. So, Chairperson, this is a state that we have currently. However, as the Nation House, because we are currently having the National Initiation Task Team, we're going to have that meeting of National Initiation Task Team before the end of April to get formal reports from provinces. Would if they're saying they're going to have a winter initiation soon, what strategies are put in place that will ensure would they meet all the COVID-19 regulations, province and health, that you are 1.5 meter at and all of that, all the processes that are taking place during initiation should be observed, and provinces will then come up with that kind of strategy, a risk-adjusted strategy, and they will have then to apply so that the approval is granted in that regard. Chairperson, what I should have indicated was that initially when we said the presentation, it did have page numbers that are like now. So we have evidence corrected that. I'm going to, as UDG indicated earlier on, I'm going to hand over to DDG Mukhaladi, if I'm not mistaken, to take us through from slide 10, the CIBG's customary initiation bill that has just been passed by Parliament and waiting to be gazetted. Thank you, Chairperson.
DDG, proceed. Sure.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether my camera is working. I tried to
adjust. See you. We can see you, DDG.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you and greetings to Chairperson, the members of the committee, Chairperson of the National House, the DG and colleagues. And I will be taking you through the state of readiness regarding implementation of the customary initiation bill once it is enacted. I'll be starting from slide 7. And on slide 7, we are just indicating there or outlining the administrative processes that will follow regarding the enactment of the bill. after Parliament has submitted to the President for assent. And suffice to say in that particular slide that in terms of Section 42 of the Act, the President should determine the commencement date of the Act through a proclamation in the Gazette. So the Department will be responsible for facilitation of the administrative processes in that regard. And when we go to the next slide, we still continue with the administrative processes there, and just indicating that once the President has signed the commencement proclamation, and we have received that as the Department, we will then start and commence with the processes of publication of the proclamation in the Government Gazette. And the processes, as members may be aware, they involve the government printing works processes. And on the in slide 9, it's where we start with the real state of readiness in terms of implementation. And members may be aware that in the Act, we have two critical structures or institutional mechanisms that are provided for by the Customary Initiation Bill. Sometimes I forget I call it an Act, but yeah, you will pardon me there. So those two structures, we have the National Initiation Oversight Committee, which will be operating at national level, and we have the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Committees, which will be operating at provincial level. And most of the implementation of the Act will be taking place through these structures. Just to give an example, that one of the critical functions of the National Initiation Oversight Committee will be to monitor implementation of the Act, issues of initiation awareness campaigns, the issues of the enforcement of compliance with the Act, and so on and so on. But most of the implementation will be taking place through these two structures that I just mentioned. And the four other critical elements in relation to implementation of the bill once it's enacted are the screening of principals, traditional surgeons, caregivers, and traditional health practitioners, their registration, and others. The minimum requirements for the registration of traditional surgeons, they should also be developed. Development, and there should be educational material for purposes of educating all the role players in this regard, and acceptable standards in relation to discipline at initiation schools. So the presentation, we therefore focus on the establishment of the two structures that I just mentioned, and also issues in relation to what I just presented in terms of the four critical elements. The first step that will be required in terms of implementation of the CIB once it is enacted will be the establishment of the National Initiation Oversight Committee, as I indicated. And in terms of the Act, we should establish this structure within 3 months after the date of commencement of the Act has been proclaimed. And in preparation for the establishment of the National Initiation Oversight Committee, Chairperson, as you may be aware and the members of the committee may be aware, the members of the National Initiation Oversight Committee, they will be coming from various government institutions, and those members, most of them are either public office bearers or government officials. So in preparation for the establishment of this committee, we have started a process with the department. We have prepared letters for the minister to the following persons, where the members of the committees or of the National Initiation Oversight Committee will be coming from. And those letters, we just are waiting the commencement, and they will be signed and sent to the people that we are outlining in 2.6 in compliance with what is stipulated in the Act. And the minister also, as part of the members of the National Initiation Oversight Committee, should designate one senior official from the DTA as a member of the committee. And at the same time, the premiers also should establish the provincial initiation and coordinating committees within 3 months after commencement of the Act. So as the DTA, so that the provinces are aware of this legal requirement, we have also prepared some letters to the premiers and of all the provinces to make them aware of the time frame for the establishment of their provincial initiation coordinating council. And in 2.9 there, we're just indicating that the letters that we are writing, they may not apply to the Eastern Cape, because Eastern Cape, they already have an initiation act of 2016. And that particular act, it makes provision for the PICC. And the act, our CIA, determines that in a province where they have already established a provincial initiation coordinating council, then they will continue as such. They don't need to then re-establish that particular committee. However, if there are some gaps or in that provincial PICC, then the national legislation will prevail, meaning then the CIA will prevail in terms of, for instance, the functions of that particular committee. If there are certain functions of the PICC in the CIA, and in terms of that provincial legislation, the PICC is not performing those functions, then automatically, then that PICC should perform those functions. And where there are gaps, then the Customary Initiation Act will then prevail. And I've already mentioned that most of the implementation, if you go to the this slide, they happen there. Most of the implementation will happen through those two structures. So in terms of Section 10 of the Act, the Department of Traditional Affairs must provide financial and administrative support to the National Initiation Oversight Committee. And that administrative support will include the Secretariat support to the National Initiation Oversight Committee. And as a department, we have already started the process of creating human resource capacity for legislation implementation, monitoring, and compliance, which will, among others, include the Secretariat support to the National Initiation Oversight Committee. As members may be aware, the Traditional and Khoisan Leadership Act has just commenced, so that particular division will be ensuring that there is implementation and there is administrative support provided for both the CIA and also the TKLA. So we have commenced with those processes of ensuring that there is a human resource capacity for implementation of the CIA. And in terms of the financial support, as members may be aware, and as I already indicated, that most of the members of the National Initiation Oversight Committee will be coming from government, and some of which will be public office bearers coming from public entities. So as in the membership of the NIOC, as provided for in the CIA, there is a provision that the minister may appoint not more than two people outside of the ones that we have listed. And if should the minister appoint those two people who are not working for government, then there it will be the only two people where we will need a compensation of employees budget. But the rest, we will not need any compensation of employees. It will only be the goods and services budget that we will need. And that, as a department, we will be able to provide such a budget. But we will also await the establishment of the NIOC so that we ensure that the budget that we provide to them will enable the NIOC to be fully functional and to be very effective in performing its functions as provided for in the legislation. And in terms of provinces, like I indicated at the beginning, that the PICCs, they are also very critical structures at provincial level to ensure that there is implementation of the Act at provincial level. It will be the same kind of support that will be required from the PICC, which is administrative, financial, and secretariat support. And Section 9 of the Act, it requires that the NIOC should develop and maintain a database, and the Department of Traditional Affairs will be able to assist in that regard. And in the next...
Chairperson?
Honorable Kaza?
Chairperson, can I ask, there's many acronyms here. Can I ask because I'm caught between my...
You are very right.
Between my phone...
You are very right.
I'm struggling. She's talking, she's expecting me that I should catch up with all those PICCs. CIA, I'm thinking of some police in America.
NIOC.
ETA, we know. But can we catch up? Why? Or is that an exercise for us? That is members that we should catch up while they are presenting. What is going on? Who told that presentations in Parliament must then be, because they are members of the public here that come here, and they must catch up. There are some traditional leaders that are on this platform. They must catch up with all these things and report to their constituents. So maybe next time we should propose in the meeting that just like if you go up presenter there, there's a page up here that in that slide 13 where you put the traditional DTA, then you put traditional affairs so that we go with you. Because fine, we read this thing and then we prepared some notes, and then now we got to again catch up with you and be caught up between our phones and all those things.
It's fair enough, Honorable Kaiser. They didn't even put maybe a JB on the intro then indicate NIB refers to. You know, you will be able to refer on the page or evidence. I think it's a fair comment. And then can you talk to all these acronyms? Because like what Honorable Kaiser
insane. He couldn't even focus because he needs to go to his home to check what does this mean. So it's better to write it maybe in several locations in full, then you'll put this thing in the brackets as you move on. Or when they're like this, when you present, talk to say, don't say NIOC, mention this word before. That will assist, like you think the concern is very genuine.
It will assist a lot, Chairperson, sorry to interject. At times in some other presentation, we get, we read a lot, and some documents at the beginning will then put what is the minister, you know, then it will then say the minister in this case is this and that if you read the legislation. And then it would have helped us a great deal. Wouldn't they be here and asking those things now? Because now there would have been provisions. Maybe that will be the suggestion to assist the situation.
I think at their level, as they were presenting the report, it's okay with them using acronyms. But here, DDG, you hear the concern, and it's a genuine one. Even for the other colleagues who are still going to present in this committee, now you know. So if these acronyms are there, just say the CIA, as and when you read it in full, as you are presenting, okay? In future, have that glossary of terms, a provision on your documents, eh?
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. We will definitely do that. And going forward, now as I present, I will say them in full. So in terms of the implementation of the Customary Initiation Act by provinces, we expect premiers to establish the provincial initiation coordinating councils within 3 months and after the commencement of the Act, and we also expect that they provide the administrative, financial, and secretariat support to the provincial initiation coordinating committees. And we will, as the Department of Traditional Affairs, support provinces in this regard and ensure that they comply with the time frames of 3 months. And section 9 of the Act also requires that the National Initiation Oversight Committee should develop a database, and the department through its goods and services budget will ensure that this is done. And we will also consult with the National Initiation Oversight Committee once it is established to ensure that that particular database it meets the requirements of the Act, because it is a database that will be having information on statistics, on deaths, on investigations, on registrations, and many other things in relation to initiation. So we'll ensure that we consult with the National Initiation Oversight Committee once it is established to ensure that such a database complies and is endorsed by the National Initiation Oversight Committee. In section 19, it requires that the National House must, after consultation with provincial houses, and in instances where a province does not have a provincial house, that after consultation with the Premier or the MEC that has been designated by the Premier for this purpose, then the National House should develop the criteria for purposes of screening of principals, traditional surgeons, caregivers, and traditional health practitioners, should also develop the minimum requirements for the registration of traditional surgeons, which should comply with Section 41(3) of the Act, and should also develop the educational materials for educating all the role players in the customary initiation practice on the rights, responsibilities, roles and functions, and should also develop acceptable standards relating to discipline of initiation schools. In this regard, Chairperson, I've already indicated the four key things that we should, as the department, supporting the National House, making sure that they are done as part of implementation of the Act. And in Section 41 of the Act, it provides that the minister should, by notice in the Gazette and after consultation with the premiers, determine the fees. The premiers and other role players determine the fees to be paid by traditional surgeons for registration, for their own registration for surgeons, and also fees to be paid to traditional surgeons for their services rendered during the customary initiation practice. And also the minister, before making those the final determination on the fees, must, by notice in a Gazette, publish such fees. And the DTA division, which I indicated earlier on, responsible for legislation implementation, monitoring and compliance, in consultation with all the role players, including the National Initiation and Oversight Committee, will by the end of the 2021-2022 financial year finalize those processes to support the minister to be able to determine those fees and publish them. In conclusion, we are recommending that the portfolio committee takes note of the report on cultural initiation and makes input on the report that we presented. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to members of the committee.
Thank you, DDG. DG, we are fine. Can we done? Any addition, DG? Oh, that's the end of the presentation.
Yes, that's the end, Chairperson. No additions from my side. Thank you very much.
Okay, colleagues. Can I see a show of hands on the platform of colleagues who want to interact with these two presentations merged into one? Checking on my platform thus far. It's Mukalipi, Feather, the only two hands thus far on the platform. I'm only seeing the two hands. Oh, and then Honorable Derek Tulu. The Deputy Chairperson will assist in responding to questions by members, right? I see a hand is up. The Honorable Direko. Direko. Yes. Can we start with Honorable Mukalipi? Honorable Mukalipi.
Yes. Greetings to you, Chairperson, and greetings to colleagues and the department and the Chairperson.
Umashangu. I see you. I see you even said us to work last week.
Yeah, I was missing the committee, Chairperson. If I can ask Andile to fly to the presentation, especially on challenges, when the DG was making a presentation, I was interested on challenges that he was going through, not the DG man. I think Mr. Abrams told
when he was
CEO. Oh, yes.
Andile?
So I want to comment on the challenges broadly, so we can have on one page with the department as well as the leadership of traditional Babu Mahlangu.
Honorable Mpumzo, I have also noted you. Eh? You are on the speaker's list. Who's Tolu Lendevu? Can I ask Tolu Lendevu to mute the microphone, please? It's causing a disruption. We are hearing your conversation with the other people there. Thank you. Yes, here's the slide on the screen, Honorable Mkalipi.
Okay. With this challenge is that being mentioned here, I just want to get from the department what is very serious. And I know for a fact that the department will work with the leadership of Amakhosi, which is led by Babu Mahlangu. For instance, how far as a department to track down those unregistered illegal schools, which for me, it has the one that is causing us problem mostly when we have these challenges of the death when it's reported. So I think it zoom in straight to unregistered or illegal schools. And I think this is not the first time which we spoke about this issue here in the committee and we raise our concern correctly so. And if the department can also share with us the experience of abduction of boys in detail, because I'm hearing for the first time, after they have abducted, what happens to those boys? I'm very interested because we can be members of parliament, chair, but we are also parents. And it does not occur well. I know that for the fact that we hear from media in terms of what is happening in other parts of the country, like in Nigeria, but most of the time is the abduction of girls. So here I'm hearing for the first time. So if the department can also elaborate on that one. And also this gangsterism, especially in Gauteng, it's also not occurring well with us. And the lack or minimal involvement of parents, traditionalism and in community in some areas. This one is very critical, Chair. And we also want to know in terms of the role of women, because I know for a fact Babu Mahlangu will agree with me and the department that in rural areas or in traditional areas, the role of women are still not taken very serious. And when we're engaging or debating this customary initial bill, I think sometimes 2 weeks ago in Parliament, as the EFF, we also stressed for the fact that we as women want to be involved. I know it's still happening. You know, Chairperson, if I can share with you, I have a colleague here who is also a member of a traditional council in KZN. And, you know, I thought that comrade is progressive because we always talk about everything as comrades. But I was so shocked when he told me that, no, I was joking with him to say that I have to come and visit them when they are in the traditional council in one on KZN in Potchefstroom. And without Jay, with Amahloni, he told me that, no, you must know the very well that when we came to, during this traditional council in Potchefstroom, you are going to sit there, because as women, you don't sit at the chair. So I'm talking about the comrade who I thought is very progressive. I didn't take it for lightly, that comment, even if it was a joke, Chairperson, but for the fact I know this is happening. So that's why I want to know the involvement of parents, but in this juncture, the role of us as women, because at the end of the day, it's in the labantu of these boys who are undergoing these initiation processes. Physical abuse of initiations, including assault and deprivation of water. I think one of the medical reports in the Eastern Cape also talks to this one. So in a nutshell, I just want to get from the department, how are you broadly dealing with these challenges? Because even if you can have this SIB in place is not going to address all of this. We need to prepare ourselves as the department to ensure that once the president have signed that bill into law, we are ready as the department to deal with these challenges. And as you were mentioning from the beginning, Chairperson, that it is not the first time dealing with this, especially these challenges. And our critical points that we raised before was the death of the young boys. And we certainly, no one will agree with the fact that after this Ustigo, some people must die. So because it's reported that they were dead, they were dead in death. So we want to know, what are the circumstances leading to death of 13 initiates who lost their lives on December 2020? And is anyone held liable for the death of the initiates as resolved by Copter Ministry? And going forward again now, because the report is about the preparation of 2021, even the report is also acknowledging that in 2020 there was no death because most of the initiation, most of this process was suspended. So now, if there are some provinces saying that they are ready to go on in 20 days, even if Uba Mahlangu and other leaders who are here can also share with us, because the department might not have a direct link with those people on the ground, but I know that the leaders might have some more indication and the link with the leaders in order to, for us to avoid some more deaths to continue. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mkalipi. Can I hand over to Honorable Kheza?
No, thank you very much. I am to start with the last presentation as it related to the customary initiation bill. We did agree in principle the last time in Parliament that the customary practice of initiation must always be subject to the Constitution, which in essence should cater for human rights as enshrined in Section 10, 11, 27, and 28 of the Constitution, to prevent children from gangsterism in the Vaal and in all provinces. While we are at it, Chairperson, let us reiterate the question about the amendments in the Children's Act as to what would be the effect of different provinces in terms of their take on the ages of the children. I know that the labor law in Basutu, the age has somewhat changed due to the period between primary and high school, and the fact that there has been laws that have changed the behavioral patterns and created new patterns, and in the process denigrated the relegated the participation of the traditional leaders, and finding Parliament having to on its own and in its own design having to exercise authority and functions that could have been best handled at a kingship level. But we are here now to say that by December 2020 we have lost 13 lives, and I couldn't hear in the presentation what were the proactive measures that were put in place. I did hear though that there was no presence of the medical practitioners, which we have said they must be party to this process the last time we met. We focused on some factors, Chairperson, that contributed to some psychological and stigmatization of the initiates in communities, and to somewhat not consider such issues that is, as it pertains to the age and the readiness and coming out of age of those initiates, which would have a negative lifetime impact in their lives in general in the community and how they are viewed, and would then gave the last time the go ahead for the Eastern Cape to then proceed with the initiation according to their risk plan. But having lost 13 lives is lives too many, Chairperson. In any province, not just the Eastern Cape, if it happens everywhere in the country, it should be not just a report on the numbers, but on what then we would do as my colleague Honorable Kalipi has said, that we're also parents who will take these children to the initiation school, and if this continue to happen, particularly as they relate to botch initiation schools and all those things, which we have said a number of times in this committee, botch. And another presentation, I can assure you, Chairperson, that we'll talk about botch initiation school bogus and inexperienced traditional surgeons. And I've said in the committee, I forget the name of the presenter. I often embed with names from the Department of Traditional Affairs, that she had provided that, of course, there are matters in traditional leadership and government framework that really provide a working together with the traditional leaders. And my problem then, where is the Department of Health and Department of Water and Sanitation? What multifaceted approach would you have taken as a Department of Traditional Affairs to prioritize rural safety for most particularly the people that then take advantage of the rural communities and just take children and who have come to a decision that now we've come of age and then singaziba, we can, I don't know what's the best term. Sometimes the translation is not as literal when you translate it into English. When boys are taking to the initiation school without the permission of the parents, it's called ukuziba. But what then will be the action that will be taken in this case of the rural areas on boys of in terms of ukuziba? And then you take into account the issue of forced migration by the system from apartheid to now, then continue to form areas where there is risk of criminal element, where people are confined into townships, and where these things they are not properly led, where these things mostly happen. If you take Port Elizabeth in the Eastern Cape, and you take the Vaal, where there is gangsterism, it's a well public known fact that is the case. And what action will be taken to ensure that there's direct connection between the traditional affairs traditional affairs department, the water affairs department, water and sanitation, to write to to the Department of Health and the Department of Police, in order to and the Department of Justice, in order to ensure that this whole thing is well coordinated and well calculated in terms of eradicating the criminal element that continues to take advantage of our people. And then the last one, chapter three, will be the issue of the socio-economic conditions that could have emanated from these structures that we have built, that we call townships. And then vis-a-vis the rightful customary practice that should, that process that should be followed. What is the department, apart from the cutting that we are talking about all the time, which can be done in monitoring directly, simple, you bring the medical practitioners to monitor that. And then apart from that, socio-economic conditions that would have contributed in much more desperate behaviors, at the wealthy behaviors that are emanating as a result of the social economic conditions. What would be the approach there? Because if it's not the root causes are not directly dealt with, we are here to talk about this thing for a very, very long time without a proper approach. Then, Chairperson, the last one, if you allow me to just deviate a bit, because some of the things will then give much impact if the department will come in. I just want to check, since let me check my notes here just a bit. Okay. We are here talking about the customary initiation bill and customary practices and the challenges and all those things. And during this time, I have spoken here in this committee about the continual reports in public. In IOL, you can go to Times News. You can go to any public media platform. You will find the killings of the Indunas. You'll find the killings of the kings and some of the traditional leaders. Even here in KwaNdebele in Thembisile, where a king has just been murdered. And what action has the department taken, proactive action has been taken to remedy this situation? Because obviously the more kings are being murdered and the more Indunas are being murdered, this whole thing of that we are trying to bring a solution to here will not have peace and proper thoroughgoing process without the involvement of the custodians of this practice. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Kaiser. Can I hand over to Honorable Kulu to have a bite on these issues? Honorable Kulu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening to you and all members, and good evening to the National Chairperson of the House, Nkosi Mahlangu Mabhoko, and the colleagues from the National House who were mentioned to be part of this portfolio meeting tonight. Chairperson, I think I must first state, in my understanding, cultures, customs, and traditions are not static. They change as time goes by. And my take is from the point that it seems on this one, there is very little move from where it was during the days of our grandfathers. And Chairperson, you know, I've just been listening to the presenter. The first presenter was mentioning, as honorable member who first took a bite, Honorable Mkhalipi, dealt with the issue of these unregistered and illegal schools, or the challenges that they are having. You know, Chairperson, these schools are situated in the areas of territorial leaders, where you have senior territorial leaders, you have headmen, you have ordinary citizens who are residing in the areas. What do they do when they see these bombers being erected in the open fields? Can't they go and report those to their leaders and establish whether those practitioners are the qualified ones to do the work for our boys? You know, we've since this practice was exposed from the 1994 era of a new era of our governance, then the media was sort of allowed to sort of report about these things. Otherwise, we would not be knowing, had it not been for the media to go and sort of try to make coverages of these activities. Chairperson, you know, as I've just been saying, this issue of unregistered and illegal schools, you have the SEPS members who should have been maybe engaged on this erection of the bombers to go and establish exactly whether those people who are practicing there are people who really are qualified to do the work. My last take, Chairperson, is on the last presenter. You know, as she was making mention of traditional surgeons and the practitioners. And my question now, who actually approves, who actually issues certificates to say these people are qualified to do the work? As we've been hearing that there are other people who do this, who are not qualified to assist in the initiation of our boys. Chairperson, you know, in order to quell all these challenges of the unnecessary loss of life for our boys, we need actually should have long taken an initiative, as the department is trying to, but we should speed up the process so that we stop this unnecessary loss of life from our youth. But one would really want to know who actually trained these people and then declare them as qualified people to exercise the initiation on our boys. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Trevor Tulu. Can I allow Honorable Mpumza?
Thanks, Chairperson. Good evening, Chair.
Can't see you.
The National Chair of
We
the,
can't see you.
Oh, you want to see me?
Yes, Honorable Mpumza.
Let me try so that you see me.
Doc, are you in the car?
Am I in now, Chef?
Just
I'm not in that, I'm in the car, I'm not in that house, you know. I'm trying, Chair, to see whether things want to change. I don't know.
If they don't change, just proceed. I think they will be able to pick your picture from the
Okay, sir.
Yes.
Thanks very much. Greetings to the national chair and national traditional leaders, as well as the provincial leaders of the house, and the colleagues, and all honorable members. Chairperson, the presentation is preambled in the background by the fact that preambling and also preceding the number of challenges that are listed that are actually damning and putting this solemn cultural practice dear to the culture of the people into that name. But the challenge that is related that the practice is being hijacked by bogus surgeons and charlatans, as well as the number of challenges that are cited. This critical post is a question and a thought that why would this within traditional communities this prevail? And this to me, it actually points to the fact that maybe the monitoring capabilities of our traditional communities and traditional institutions has not been geared up to respond appropriately to this challenge that have emerged, actually putting into this cultural practice into distribute. It's a matter that perhaps going forward, the department and the national house and the provinces need to look at as to how do we begin to strengthen the monitoring capabilities so that we are in a position to preempt these charlatans and the setting up of these illegal initiation schools. Chair, on the meeting of the 27th of November, 2020, presentations were made by the National House, the Department, and Contralesa, as well as the Civil Rights Commission, in relation to one, arguing that one, that this suspension or moratorium actually is exacting some form of a pressure, which would allow a window of what my honorable member, honorable Kaiser said, Ubusi Bakwa Makhwetha. And as a result of that, the Eastern Cape, I think, Unkosi, I forgot now the name, but a presentation was made by the Eastern Cape on the, he has just said, risk plan, which was so convincing, and when looking at it as a presentation, was so watertight that perhaps this would preempt any potential death by the initiative. But now, despite that, we are getting that almost 13 initiates died. Now, when this was lifted, as a result of this submission for the Eastern Cape, it was on condition that should any death happen, then people would be held alive. Could the committee now be expressed, actually be appraised to after these 13 deaths in the Eastern Cape? Has anyone been liable for that? If what is it that we're doing at the Eastern Cape to ensure that those people who are liable for these deaths are actually brought to book? The other issue, sir, to me is that what I would like to understand is that what lessons have been drawn from the 2020 December initiation season, in relation to conducting this initiation during the COVID period, what lesson could we draw from that period? And at the same time, the department has made a presentation on the bill. And the presentation suggests that the department would be legally bound to provide financial support to the National Initiation Oversight Committee, either in the form of goods and services. Now, can the department actually tell us, in their budget forecasting, what possible amount they are looking at that they would set aside for this work of the National Initiation Oversight Committee? Also, that the minister had to limit the fees of the traditional statutes. And in that determining those fees, I hope they would be standard fees throughout the country. Do we think that determining that standard fee for the traditional statutes would actually preempt this issue of having bogus and illegal surgeons and actually mobilize, I'm short of the English word. Honorable as I said, there is no word for Tumuzima. But these bogus that surgeons, they actually, it's more in English, is tantamount to abduction, because they mobilize, although they will mobilize amakhwenkwe afuna ukuziba. Then would these, providing those fees, would actually preempt any surgeons or emergence of bogus surgeons, so that we don't have this thing of illegal initiation schools. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mpumza. Can I allow Honorable Direko to take the floor?
Thank you, Chair. Let me also acknowledge the presentations that have been presented to us. Chair, I think most of my questions were covered by my colleague. However, I just feel that I have. Chair, in my area lately, it's been a norm that most of young boys who are starting to gain interest in gangsterism, they prefer to go to the initiation schools. So how does the department deal with the situation of gangsterism in the initiation schools? Because it creates a negative attitude towards our tradition. And secondly, Chair, what are the lessons that the department have learned from the challenges of the initiation process? And how is the department resolving those challenges, such as your physical abuse, death of the initiates, and illegal schools that are operating? And the last one, Chair, one of my very close family member went to initiation school while she was sick, and she was admitted, and few days after being admitted, she passed away. So I would like to check with the department that how does the initiation school address the issue of initiates who have medical, who needs medical attention? Is there any basic requirement of accepting people? Do they do the medical background check before admission? And if not, what can be done in order to save the life of the initiates, and also the integrity of the school? Because if this matter is not addressed, then people will end up saying people are being killed in the initiation schools, and all those unnecessary allegations will be there. So what are the measures in place in ensuring that whoever went there who needs medical attention, there's a way of the person getting a medical attention? If it's beyond the initiation school, then they send those people to the medical facilities that we have in the country. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Director Aispeli, you're done?
Yes, I'm done, Chair. Thank you.
You are muted.
I'm done now, thank you, Chair. I'm saying.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Director. Chairperson of the National House and the Deputy Chair, we were here in November. There were commitments that we are going to make sure that we comply with the COVID-19 regulations. There were commitments that will make sure that there's no life lost. Then the report says there's been 13 deaths, and this only happened in the Eastern Cape, because this is the only province that hosted initiations in December 2020. The colleagues have said that to say, because in terms of those plans that were submitted to the department, DG Depot, there were commitments that people are going to take responsibility and make sure that no life is lost. So we want that accountability, DG. On, as the colleagues have said, we want accountability to know what happened to the culprits that are related to this 13 death. And then we were assured that there is an initiative to integrate medical men circumcision into the initiation practice. And we were told that there were measures that has been taken in that regard. This is our engagement on the 27th of November 2020. Then if this indeed chairperson and deputy chairperson has been happening, why then did we have this 13 deaths as a consequence thereof? And we might think that it's only 13 deaths. You remember there are other things wherein others get injured. Some of them, they even have to be imputated. We know these things. And this figure is not coming. We are saying it's only 13 deaths. There's not been any other incidences that also results to the issue of imputation that has always been a norm, in particular in this province. The other question, I want assurance. We were told that there would be an introduction of compulsory pre-medical screening in this case. It's a pity we only called a DTA. I think in future we must call also the police to come and update us on these matters, the Department of Health. But where I'm seated, if you are seated with 13 deaths in one province, was this pre-medical training ever done? Because if it's death related to other things, that pre-medical screening will have been assisted. Then I don't hear anything what happens with regard to the role of parents in relation to these initiations and practices. I'm raising this because at the end, these children that died, they belong to families. It's parents who suffer the rest at the end of the day. And then maybe somebody will tell us that what role has been parents been playing to that regard? What happens when a child dies there? Is there a mechanism to support the parents of these children who have died in these schools? Then we are the illegal schools. Definitely there were some. My suspicion, even some, mainly most of these deaths might have been coming from these illegal schools. Can we get clear statistics to say how many illegal schools were there in December there at the Eastern Cape? And then if they were there, how many people were arrested, as the other colleagues have raised? And what is the status of their prosecution? Because unless something is done, you will continuously have these young boys dying there at the schools. And then what has been the recourse for this initiation school owners? As Honorable Kebekolo was saying, these things are happening in traditional authorities where they are the Indunas, they are chiefs, they are whatever, and then how do we allow these things to happen in our communities? And then did the department itself enforce the directives, the COVID directives? As you remember in your presentation in December, DG, you said that the draft regulation and directives that were going to be enforced. Did the department actually enforce this? Those are some of the issues that one wants clarity on. Maybe based on your responses, one will be able to then follow up. But I think I should hand over to you. I will allow the department and the CEO of the National House to be the first one to respond, and then the deputy chairperson and the chairperson will be the last ones to respond to these issues. Let's follow that order, please.
Chairperson,
DG.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. And thanks to the honorable members for the comments and the questions that have been raised. I think if we could just ask the CEO to take some of the questions, the CEO and the DDG, and then I'll just make some few here and there on areas where they might have some of the questions. The Secretary of the House, just told.
DG, thank you, and thank you to members for the questions. DG, I will start with the questions from Honourable Member Mkhalipi and go down in that order. Chair, the issue of unregistered or illegal school, it's a cancer that we have. It's something that we are really fighting with, and it's just not ending. When you think people have learned, then you find new ones who are coming up with this kind of a situation. We are trying our level best through our provincial initiation task team to track down whatever initiation school that is taking place in provinces, and many of them are being closed down. But some, you find that already damage is done. You only realize that there's an initiation school when there's death. For instance, at some stage in Eastern Cape, where there was an illegal initiation school, when the monitoring team was approaching, I mean, the school is located in a space wherein you have a problem to reach it. And when the monitoring teams are coming, the initiates will just run away and so on. So that's a problem we're having. And in some instances, you find what if today there was an initiation school here, and when you go to check, it has tracked and moved somewhere else. Sometimes you hear the farm owner complaining about sheep that are being slaughtered or are being lost in the farm. And when you go and investigate, there is an initiation school which, once they slaughter one sheep or two, they trek to another place and so on. They become nomadic, which is something that is uncultural. It's something that was never heard of, that an initiation school can be nomadic. And that's a problem we are having. But we are working very hard with our provincial initiation task teams, monitoring teams, to ensure that they put their ears on the ground to hear whatever initiation school that is taking place. In some areas, Chair, you find when you discover an unregistered initiation school, then they will immediately move away and take those initiates to a home and lock them in a room where you will not know that there are people inside that room. So that is a challenge we're having, but our monitoring teams have been, to a certain extent, successful in uncovering all these people who are doing this. And remember, our monitoring teams, normally they have police with them. They go with the police and arrest that do take place and so on. Now, abduction of boys, what happened with those boys? Well, when they are abducted, they get initiated into the initiation school, and parents get informed after they get informed that their children have been initiated. And this is a problem that we're having, to a certain extent, that we have advised that a boy who has been abducted should not be allowed into the initiation school until the parents have given consent. But this, because the person who's doing this is not a traditional leader, and therefore does not carry the responsibility that a traditional leader carries, we'll look at the benefits that he is going to get with the number of boys that are in the initiation school. And that is why I said the abduction happens in Gauteng, and when I was making an example, the person will go to Limpopo, and ultimately the Iboma or the school will be in Mpumalanga, but the owner of the school will be staying in Limpopo. And so that is where then we have that problem of provinces having to come together to resolve this. Hence, we had a meeting with the different provinces where we have established this problem, and we agreed on a working relationship on ensuring that we stem this out. Now, Chair, the issue of gangsterism, yes, we have heard about it, gangsterism, Uti, one, some initiation schools in the Val, they do not teach this initiates. That is why ECIB, when UDDG was presenting and saying there must be a syllabus of some sort that will say when you attend the initiation school, this is what you will be taught. But At this place, they are taught how to pickpocket, how to do all these illegal things. And in most cases, you find that when these teachings take place, there is an intoxicating substance that is normally given to these boys. And they come back being different people than when they went into that. And one cannot call it initiation school. It can be initiation school. It's something else which is not an initiation school. But that is happening, and that we have established. That is why we have put it here, that there's gangsterism that is taught in some other initiation school in the province of Gauteng, which the Gauteng provincial monitoring team is working on that to stamp out that particular issue. Now, on the issue of the lack of adequate involvement of parents, Chair, it is on this matter. On the abduction, parents will not be involved because they will not be aware that their child or their children have been abducted. To an extent, until they are being told that their children have been abducted and they are at an initiation school X, and then they will start to make a follow-up, and only to find that those parents, some of them have not undergone initiation. So it becomes difficult for them to go and check. Hence, the provincial monitoring teams and the National House, including the department, will then intervene, go and check the conditions of those children, find out everything about those abducted boys. But the problem that we are having is that they do get abducted, and they do get initiated. But in a normal situation, Chairperson, when a boy or when a person wants to attend the initiation school and comes there alone at the initiation school, that person is arrested and put somewhere else, and we wait for the parents to give consent, and we wait for the parents to say, no, we don't practice that culture, that boy must come back, and then is released back home. But in some instances, but that happens only when the school is legal. But when the school is illegal, the person will rush for money and will tell the parent that already your child is in the initiation school, therefore you need to pay X amount of money. And in our traditions, is that an initiate is actually automatically becomes a child of an inkosi. That is why in the registered initiation school, they are no orphans. All the initiates are called children of inkosi, bantwana benkosi bonke njalo, and they all get treated the same. But in this case, you find out there's that problem. Now, the involvement of women, abo mama, in the scheme of things, I wouldn't say it differs from community to community, but what I know and what is happening is that you can't have an initiation, or you cannot take your child to initiation school without the family having discussed that this boy is now grown up, he has to undergo initiation. Remember, it's not only about initiation, but it's about forming regiments. And that is being discussed at home, and the mother is there when the discussion takes place. She contributes. When you come to the Ndebele custom, the mother is the one who will cook for the children, and he will wear on what we call umlingakobe, as an indication that she is aware that the child has undergone initiation, and that she is aware that the child must get food and all of that. And she will start to prepare the beads and all those kinds of things that are required, which is the same to all other communities. But in an illegal or unregistered school, the mother will not be involved. Even the father will only hear after the boy has been taken into the initiation school and so on. So that is something which we're working on very, very serious. We're saying everybody must be involved in the initiation school, so that the family takes full responsibility of the initiation. It is not only the father who takes that responsibility. Yeah, we have issued, Chairperson, as I said earlier on, a guide to the monitoring teams that when they arrive or when they go to monitor, they must ensure what if they check whether is there water, whether was there any pre-medical checkup, and they are those certificates in the school. But what we have established, Inkosunde, who is part of this meeting, will attest to this, is that there are some boys who or parents who will say if Ustole has to undergo initiation and he fails a pre-medical test, and his elder brother or younger brother will go and he passes that, then this is Tole will take the certificate of the one who has passed the test and then use it to go to initiation school, which is something that we are working on as well. It's something that we have identified as a challenge, which we are working on to ensure what if only those who have undergone initiation, those who are going for the potential initiates, go to pre-medical checkup, and that their medical certificates cannot be the same, because there are those who have the same medical certificate, but you can see that the name was removed and a new name was put in there. So that is what we are working on, Chairperson. Now, the physical abuse and deprivation of water, which the Honourable Member asked, how do we deal with this? Chair, we have indicated that you can't have an initiation school where there's no water in a desert. That's the first thing. When you have initiation school, you must have water, because despite drinking that water, the initiates must pass as well. Therefore, the owner of the school must ensure that there's water. And if there's no water, then they must approach the municipality to provide water tankers to initiation school, as it has happened in areas like Western Cape, wherein the municipality provided ama water tankers to initiate. But the biggest issue is not about lack of water, but is about refusal of initiates to take water. which leads to dehydration. Hence, we have this death in Eastern Cape, which amongst others is the lack of this dehydration. That is why I said is preventable deaths, which could have happened. And Chair, it's unfortunate that three of the 13 who died, they did not die as a result of initiation, but they did as a result of fear. They were fighting and they got shot in the process. So that is a matter of police which is being investigated and arrests are taking place. We will get the full progress on the whole matter of arrest and prosecution of those who were found to have caused death. Now I've dealt with gangsterism, Chairperson. The effect of the amendment of the Children's Act. Chair, this is a matter that has been a complaint on a number of occasions. When you look at different communities, Chair, the age of initiate starts from 12. And when you look at the Children's Act, it gives you a different age. It gives you 18 years. To a certain extent, it gives you 16 years that the permission must be granted if a person is 16 years, but 18 years, that person is an adult. So this has been a thorn in the flesh of many communities. When you go to Mpumalanga, Amapulane, they take their children below that age. When you go to Limpopo, it's the same. And in various other communities, we have raised this with the portfolio committee during the discussion of the customary initiation bill, that there is this challenge. Hence, the portfolio committee took it upon itself to approach the Committee on Social Development when they were discussing the amendment of the Children's Act to find ways to deal with these age differences in communities. So there's synergy between the two pieces of legislation. So, Chair, it's a matter that is a serious challenge, and these communities do take their children who are below the age, and unfortunately, that is their culture, that is their custom, and so on, Chair. Now, proactive measures to prevent death, yes, Chair, that is why we have requested, and even e-Cabinet did so as well with Eastern Cape. Since you are saying you want to conduct initiation, winter initiation, come up with a risk mitigation strategy, so that we know what is it that you are going to do to mitigate the death of initiates. So, Chair, that is what we are doing. We always say it's very critical that we have a record that is like the one in Limpopo, where you take 300 potential initiates to initiation school and 300 come back. That is a clean initiation school. That is what we want. You go to Engutu as well. In the central KZN, they take X number of initiates to initiation school and they come back, all of them. Same applies to Kokstad. So there's those lessons that could be learned and so on. But the biggest issue here, Chairperson, that we're working on is that there's a need for transformation, the way in which we think, which must then say we need to learn from those communities how do they do this initiation better than we are doing as a community. The National Initiation Task Team is composed of various departments, which includes SAPS and it includes NPA. They all serve there. They all receive the same report that we receive. And we always ask them to play their role. But to a certain extent, Chairperson, we find it's not all the departments that are really coming to the party. I will talk about one department that Chairperson will give maybe more information on this. The Department of Arts and Culture. It is the department that is responsible for e-culture, and one of its responsibilities to assist in the initiation. We have approached that department not once. Even when the then Minister of COCTA, Dr. Mkhize, had a meeting in Durban with Kings from Eastern Cape, he did stress on this matter of the department getting involved the department promised, but we're still seeing it coming in very slow than what we expect. So there are those departments that are coming very slow. We believe they're coming into operation of the customary initiation bill, which will then be an act after being enacted, will change the attitude as a structure will be established with a legislative power than what we have at the moment. Chair, just to correct, in the Gwandebele area, it is not the king who was murdered, but is the prince, Ubabo Andries Mahlangu, who was murdered there. I just wanted to correct that. It's not the king. It's one of the senior royal family members. Inkosi Mahlangu will, chairperson of the National House, will explain better on this one. Chair, I agree with the questions asked by Inkosi. I agree with the custom is not stake and it has to change. Chair, any unregistered initiation school is an illegal school. That is why when the provincial initiation monitoring teams, when they go there, you find out that the initiates run away or the initiates hide themselves because they know they were told by the school owner that this school, we don't have a permit to hold the initiation school. So it is the problem that we're having, and traditional leaders are doing everything possible to ensure what is the thing is we nab this on the on yeah, we nab this practice. Now, it depends, Chairperson, what is where did they who approves one of the questions was who approves the Ingribi to say they are ready. Chair, in this case, you find Uti the Ingribi consent on the illegal initiation. That person never, ever in his life practiced that particular responsibility. It is only on that day that starts. And this is the issue that we have established, wherein a person who attended initiation school in the last year will be the one who's holding initiation school. We have totally, we're totally against that. And we indicate even in the Customary Initiation Act, we do indicate Ingribi must have at least been part of expert of region before that person to be allowed to practice the Ubungibi content. Now, practice by bogus people, Chair, we have already addressed one. It is hijacked in the sense that when you have initiation school in the township, that's where traditional leaders don't have control in township. For instance, in the Vaal, no traditional leader there. Eh? But when you to Wasulu, Verina, the traditional leader, you don't hear these things because all schools that are there are properly registered. Those people are known in the community, would be able to manage initiation school. But in the township, you will not know. That is why even now, Chairman, as we speak now, there are some initiation school that has been closed down now as we talk. A provincial initiation monitoring team has just closed down one initiation school that has entered without permission, without reporting to anybody. A person just decided in the morning that he wants to conduct the initiation school and does that. So that is a developing story which we are following and monitoring what actions have been taken against those people. But in the area traditionally, all these people who are priests, they get registered, initiates get registered, pre-medical checkups, certificates are checked, where boys come for initiation. We have agreed the National Initiation Task Team that whoever, what there be any deaths or injuries in any initiation school, proper action must be taken against that person who caused that particular death. And we're expecting the police subs who are members of the initiation National Initiation Task Team and provincial coordinating committees, because in each and every province, there is a contact police if other police stations don't want to attend the matter, we then immediately contact that particular police to activate the systems in the province. And we are expecting police to take action against those who are found to be breaking the law. And the lessons drawn of COVID, Chair, we need to be honest and practical. You will have 1.5 meter social distance initiate. That the initiation that I know that you never have. For then, let me talk about the initiation, but you must will end this. Initiation Yamandele, let me make an example of that. Well, that's why I know better. You will never get initiated, you will never have 1.5 meter thing. And therefore, e-health protocol will be broken just from the way to go when you are still going to the isbaya of the traditional lead. E-health protocol will be broken from there on. Chair. So that is not going to work. That's the lessons we have learned. There is no adequate following of e-health protocol during initiation period. And therefore, the readjusted strategy, the Eastern Cape, which was saying we're going to have to that, it to be reviewed, but it is in line with the lesson that we learned in the initiation process. Yes, Chair, there was commitment, but Chair, remember what provincial initiation monitoring committees are not always there where the initiation school, and more deaths happen in illegal initiation school where we are not aware that there's an initiation school take place. And by the time we hear this, already death happened, hence we're being informed. So it's an way in we're strengthening this monitoring, as the one honorable member said. We're saying in every village, there must be a monitoring team that's close to the traditional leader who report to the traditional leader on daily basis, on weekly basis, what is happening there, so that they are able to intervene early enough before some of the practices get off the rail. And the role of parents is very critical during initiation, Chairperson. It's extremely, if parents are not involved, they have to have a guardian who will look after the initiate, because it is the responsibility of the parent to ensure that the initiate is well treated, initiate gets taught what is all about. For instance, Minangeng was told, I need to know who are my traditional leaders, how do they follow each other, what is their praise name, and all of that. I need to be taught of customary law of my community. I need to be taught of e-behavior as a regiment. How am I expected to behave? How do I act when I see an kosana or a regiment and all of that? So that is what we've been asked the provinces to teach initially, not gangsterism. But where there are no traditional leaders, that is where we find the gangsterism being taught at initiation school. But we are working on that, Chairperson. We are trying our best to do up with this. And I'm owners of illegal initiation school. We have encouraged subs arrest and the NPA to prosecute, because they sit in the national initiators team. Chairperson, I will stop here and allow DDG, RPM, Mrs. Mukhaladi, to continue with some questions that I have, that I might not have. And thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson and members, for the questions. And that this panel has addressed most of the questions, but I will be addressing some of them from the Customary Initiation Act view and what the Act or the bill now is saying in relation to the questions. And I'll start with the one from Honorable Tessa, the one on which I think also that this panel has addressed the issue of the age. I think that one is covered, but in terms of the act, is age 16. And the honorable member also talked about the issue of human rights. Just to say that the act has fully covered the issue of human rights for the initiates and all the issues in relation to abuse of initiates. It has been fully addressed in the act to ensure that the rights of the initiates are not violated. So that is on that one, in addition to what Mr. Testole has said. I'll just stop there. And there are also penalties in the act and some fines for those principals who may have violated the rights of the initiates. And I think the other one on the Department of Health, the Department of Water and Sanitation, and the rural safety in relation to initiation, that this call has also spoken to that, but maybe Chairperson and members, just to indicate there that the members of the National Initiation Oversight Committee, that structure that will be at national level and has the responsibility to implement most of the provisions of the Act. The members thereof, they include the South African Police Service, the Department of Health, and the National Prosecuting Authority. Currently, as Mr. Testole has indicated, there is a committee, but it operates not because of the Act. But then that particular committee, we have something similar in the Act, so they will be operating in terms of the Act. And I think the Parliament there, that most of the relevant stakeholders in that particular committee before passing the bill into an act. And the other issues, I think that this panel has covered, and then Honorable Tebukulu also had some questions on who issues certificates, issues of training and others, just to indicate that in terms of the Customary Initiation Act, there will be a process where the principals, the traditional surgeons, and they should apply for them to be approved to be principals of the schools and to be traditional surgeons. And they apply to the provincial initiation coordinating council of the province concerned. So they must apply, and then the national initiation the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Council will then assess their applications. How they assess their applications, when I was making a presentation, I indicated that one of the national health responsibilities is to develop a qualifying criteria for traditional surgeons and the principals. So in that regard, the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Council will then use that particular criteria to then assess these applications, and those who will qualify will then be provided with approval letters or something like a certificate for them to practice as such. And maybe also there to mention that in terms of the Traditional Health Practitioners Act, there is a Traditional Health Practitioners Council where in terms of that particular act, the Traditional Health Practitioners Act, which should then be the one approving for traditional health practitioners. And that particular council should also, the traditional surgeons should also be applying to them for approval. However, because that council is not yet established by the Department of Health, our Customary Initiation Act provides that in the interim they will be registering and being approved and given these certificates by the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Council of the province concerned. And there was also a question about training. In the Act, who will be training the principals and all the other players in relation to customer initiation and so that they perform their various roles. The Act provides, I think it's section 15, subsection 3, that the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Council may develop a training manual for all the role players who will be involved in initiation, all of them. And it also provides that the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Council must train all the role players regarding the Act, regarding what should be done. So that will also be the one of the functions of the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Council. And there will also be, just to make sure that those who are not performing their roles as expected, as provided for in the Act, there is a code of conduct also. The Act provides that the PICC should develop a code of conduct for all these role players, the traditional surgeons, the principals, and so on, and those who will be found to have violated the code of conduct, then they will they will get the right penalties as provided for in the Act. There's also some prison sentences and so on for those who would not be compliant with the Act. And there was a question on budget forecasting. On this one, I would like to say for the National Initiation Oversight Committee that the budget that will be provided to the National Initiation Oversight Committee will be informed by the plan of this committee. Once the committee has been established, then they will then be informed by their functions as provided for in the Act and all the things that they will need. I already mentioned the issue of the database, the awareness campaigns, the investigations that they will be doing and many other things, and also their meetings and so on, and their meetings also with the Provincial Initiation Coordinating Council. So the National Initiation Oversight Committee will then come up with a plan guided by those functions and guided by the work that they need to do. And based on that plan, then the department will then look at that plan and then provide resources accordingly, in accordance with the plan. But for now, it may be a little bit difficult to focus the amount of budget that we must provide, because then it would not be based on anything. There was also a question on determination of the fees that the determination of the fees by the minister, the fees for traditional surgeons and others should be standard. It is exactly, you are right, Honorable Member, It is exactly like that in the Act. Why it is the minister who is determining the fees is to make sure that they are standard nationally and we don't have one province with different kind of fees. And there was also, this will be my last maybe response, on the role of parents. The CEO of the National House has spoken to that, but I thought maybe let me add in terms of, because currently, because we do not have any legislation on these issues, we don't have like legislated roles of parents, but the Act provides for the roles of parents and the legal guidance in the customer initiation. Just to give an example of the roles that are provided, there are many, they are long, it's a long list, but I'll highlight a few. One is that the parent should have the responsibility to get the medical certificate for the parent. The medical certificate, in terms of the Act, it should be provided to the principal. And it is also the responsibility of the parent to ensure if there are any medical conditions of the child, that information is disclosed to the principal and to the caregivers and the traditional surgeon, so that is taken into consideration when certain activities within the initiation school are performed. And one other thing is that the parent should decide with the child in cases where the customary initiation includes circumcision. The parent should decide with the child whether the child is going to be medically circumcised or not medically circumcised. That is one of the rules that is also provided for in the Act for parents. So those are just few of the rules. It's a long list, but if members would like to maybe check the section 22 of the Act, so list the rules of parents and legal guardians. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DDG Mokholadi. Can I allow Nkosi Ndebu, the chairperson of the Tradition Committee at the National House, to respond to this issue, to most of these issues as raised by members? From there, I'll allow the deputy chairperson to say something. Then I'll allow the chairperson of the National House to also say something. So that's how we're going to deal with these matters now. Nkosi Ndebu, over to you.
Well, thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone. Let me appreciate the opportunity given to the National House so that we are able to discuss issues that relate to initiation. Yes, Chair, most of the issues, the CEO of the National House has already been alluded to, and I can only add, because he has covered most of the issues. Well, insofar as the age is concerned, Chair, it is true that provinces differ in terms of the ages of the initiates. Because in the Eastern Cape, it's 18 years and above. In Limpopo, I think it's 9 years or 12 years, but provinces differ in terms of the ages. But let me talk to the issue of the Eastern Cape in terms of the risk-adjusted strategy. Indeed, Chair, in 2020, the Eastern Cape presented a risk-adjusted strategy. Because there was a huge pressure that was coming from the parents wanting their kids to go for initiation because they had not gone to the initiation in June. And so there was a huge pressure and as well as a backlog in terms of the initiation is concerned. But then, Chair, there is an issue of 13 initiates that have passed on in the Eastern Cape. Yes, that is true, Chair, but the death of those 13 initiates, amongst them, there is none that relates to the COVID-19. As you would recall, three of those 13 were those that were shot dead in the initiation school, which was a criminal offense. And then most of those that are amongst the 10, the cause of death on those ones were the dehydration. You know, Chair, what actually happens here, it's very funny. These boys, they discuss about the issue of initiation while they're still at school, and they, amongst themselves, they agree that, you know what, for you to heal quickly, you must get there very dry in your body. Well, if you get there with some water in your body, it will take time for you to heal. So these boys, by the time they go to the initiation school, they've got about two to three weeks without drinking water, because that's the misinformation that they've got amongst themselves, that, you know what, when you're going to the initiation, you must not drink water. Then when they get there, 1 or 2 days they are there, they get dehydrated and they die. So most of the deaths that we had on that day were around that one. Well, on the issue of illegal initiation schools, we do not have much of that, though we still have in the Eastern Cape. But now what happens is that the deaths that are happening, most of them are not as a result of the illegal initiation schools, but most of them now, they are more of the natural causes. But then, Chair, as well, as a province, I think they've managed to arrest some of the culprits insofar as the illegal initiation schools are concerned. So, but I don't have a statistic in terms of how many that were arrested, but there were some arrests that happened after we've discovered that there were some illegal initiation. But then again, Chair, the places like your Gauteng, where there are no traditional leaders, and as well as Western Cape and Port Elizabeth, you find it very difficult, because as much as these boys are going to the initiation schools, but there is no element of traditional leadership guidance in terms of what is supposed to be happening. But I'm very proud to say in Gauteng, we have a very, very proactive team of initiation committee that is working there. So they respond very quick in terms of those unofficial elements. So without wasting your time, I think from my side, that could be my comment. And also appreciate the fact that the bill has passed the parliament stage so soon. It's going to be an act, and then it will give more direction in terms of what is supposed to be happening, because we've been trying to, you know, to get some pieces together in terms of what is supposed to happen. But now that this bill is going to be an act soon, then it will cover a lot of things in terms of what needs to happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kosindevu. The Deputy Chairperson of the National House.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, Chairperson of the National House of Traditional Leaders, Nkosi Mahlangu, the other members, including Princess Gabu and Nkosi Ndevu, and other members of the House, the DG and your team, good evening. Thank you, Chair, for this opportunity, really, especially on the issue on hand. As we know that really, it is really affecting us, especially us as women. When for inyanga as the 9, then I think within a the child just disappears. So you know exactly how are we feeling. But now I'm talking as a leader, not as a mother only. I'm happy that Nkosi Ndebe has been given the chance to say something, because Nkosi Ndebe was a part of the delegation from Eastern Cape where negotiating or part of discussions of when talking about the risk adjustment strategy. And really, I really appreciated that there are no COVID-related deaths. But that doesn't mean that we just need to relax. But the issue of the continued deaths in Eastern Cape is worrying. And I remember even during June, there were those who wanted to have illegal initiation schools, but I really applaud the leadership, personal leadership in Eastern Cape. They were running around those mountains, closing all those illegal initiation schools. But without wasting your time, a lot of responses did come from my colleagues and also Babu's tone. But the role of parents really is worrying, because some of the, when you're talking about the abductions, most of the children, Nkosi Ndebe will agree with me, most of the children who are abducted are those who are staying with grandparents or mothers where there are no fathers. So they take those chances, and you'll just be told, granny, that your child is there. Now they need so much money. They need this, and you are not even prepared. It is really, really worrying. But with Honorable Gaza knows exactly. We are coming from a page, you won't get there. Because we know exactly who are the Ingcibis. The Ingcibis, they are identified. We have just lost now one Ingcibi uTatumtimka, who is known by everybody in Pedi. But this issue of bogus Ingcibis and those who are, we have changed the initiation for Baba Fumani Mali, by Yabuyo 7, Baba Fumani Mali, Ngokwaluka, it's a real talent, but I will appreciate that chairperson, that really Eastern Cape to be put on eye. Chairperson, we need to put Eastern Cape on eye, because Amakhosi, the leadership in Eastern Cape is doing everything, but we need to come together and assist Eastern Cape. Although we know exactly sometimes in some areas, if the leadership from the national is not welcomed by Eastern Cape in some areas, they will say that no, we are still able to manage the situation, whereas they are struggling really. So thank you very much, Chair. I won't talk much, as of course Sal will address some of the issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Deputy Chairperson. Can I allow Nkosi Chairperson Matlangu to address all the other outstanding concerns as raised by members?
No, thank you, Chair, for this opportunity. Let me also appreciate the responses that have been given by my colleagues, being Nkosi Ndebe, the Deputy Chairperson of the National House, CEO, and DDG, not DG, whilst they were trying to respond. The issue, Chair, of the depth of initiates, it's a very worrying issue. I think we've tried in the Eastern Cape, and I can see they are also trying as well as a province. But I think the biggest challenge is that, the Eastern Cape is a bit of a unique province. Because we said so many times that you have provinces that are doing very well, like your Limpopo and your Northwest, and I think Mpumalanga also had its own challenges, but they are dealing with challenges. And you know, we've been saying that maybe we need to have some benchmarking in terms of seeing how other provinces are handling the issues of initiation. And I think what you normally hear is that we should not take what is happening in other provinces and try to do it in the Eastern Cape. So I then believe, I think that made me to take a decision that I think Eastern Cape, problems of the Eastern Cape will be resolved by the Eastern Cape. Because I think they believe that they have solutions to their own problems. Because I mean, we've discussed so many times that what makes other provinces to win the battle is that the medical fraternity does not only react to challenges. They are there from the beginning. And it's a medical fraternity that involves those that have gone to initiation. In Mpumalanga, Limpopo, the medical fraternity is very much involved. And I think it addresses some of the issues that were raised by Honorable Direko, that if you have people with medical challenges, how do you resolve them at initiation schools? And I think in some of those provinces, the medical fraternity would advise, even before initiation, that this boy can go to initiation, this one cannot. But in the Eastern Cape, you'll find a different situation where people will fake medical certificates. You have medical practitioners that would just send documents that people have been screened and yet people have not been screened. You'd find a situation where parents will take a younger person for medical screening, and then when the older one is the one that goes to initiation, he goes with the certificate of the other one that is well, whilst they know that the child is not well. So those are some of the things that we find in the Eastern Cape, of which I strongly believe, of which I think that's what sometimes would make one unpopular, especially in the Eastern Cape, that we need a medical fraternity to get involved from the beginning of the process, not reacting when there are problems. And I think, and I stand by it, it's something that I believe in, something that has worked in other provinces. And I think I pray all the time that I wish that in the Eastern Cape, it will be accepted, because traditional leaders, they would say, no, we accept medical personnel to come in and what have you. But their participation is extremely limited. It's extremely limited to a point where there are stereotypes, where people will say that if a person has been seen by a doctor, then he's not a fully qualified initiate. And I would say, as a traditional leaders, we need to take a decision, take a stand, and be the ones that educate people about stereotypes. That you'd rather have your son coming back, even if they call him a man, fine, but at least he's back. So rather than having a man who is said to be a man but never comes back home, because we were trying to prove things that are beyond our control. Because I believe that what the health sector says, that we have the highest communicable diseases in the country. If you look at TB, your lifestyle diseases and all those, and our children are also suffering from the same diseases. they are diabetic, they have high blood, some are HIV positive, all those things, they need you to work with a person that has some medical background. I mean, when one was asking, how do you see that this child needs medical attention or not? A traditional surgeon would not see that. Even if they have a document that says that this boy suffers from A, B, C, and D, he is not trained to be able to assess a file of a person that has been screened by a doctor, and that's where we would sometimes differ, it makes one a bit popular because others within the sector would believe that I am diluting culture, and yet if culture kills, then there is a problem. How do we make sure that this culture does not kill? I mean, we are leaders, and as leaders, we are the ones that are supposed to be helping to come up with solutions. You know, if you see that this thing is not working, it is killing our children year in and year out, if you continue doing the same thing and hoping for different results, it's a problem. That's why I was pleading earlier, Chair, that the department needs to have a directorate, and that directorate is the one that needs to go and work and check the issue of compliance, make sure that, from the beginning, we discuss with medical doctors, and they work with traditional surgeons and work in partnerships, and we've seen those partnerships work in other provinces. And I think if there could be a serious focus in the Eastern Cape, yes, I know that will become unpopular, but if there could be a serious focus in the Eastern Cape and try to convince traditional leaders there. I mean, it is the only province where you have what you call amakangata. Each and every initiative as a person that is supposed to be responsible for. But yet you have all these problems. Then you'd ask yourself, what is the job or what is the work of amakangata? Because in other provinces, you don't have amakangata and you don't experience the deaths that we are seeing in the Eastern Cape. Maybe there has to be training of those amakangata, or there has to be a different system that we work with. But I believe that there has to be serious attention in the Eastern Cape. I mean, during this COVID period, it was a small number that went to initiation. But if you have 10 deaths, if you compare it to the bigger numbers that we've had before, the number is huge. You know, I think 13 is a big number for people to die. I mean, during normal periods where other provinces take 40,000 boys, you do not even have more than two people that will die. You know, so it tells us that there is a problem, and I'm hoping that people from that province will realize that there's a serious problem in the province, and it needs people to change. You know, it needs people to change their attitude and approach these things differently. You know, even the level of accountability as well needs to be strengthened, you know, because most of us would speak and want things, but when it is tough, I think in terms of taking responsibilities, we don't take responsibilities. There's been an issue on killing of traditional leaders that I also wanted to come into. I think, Bapteza, our police, I don't think they care about our lives as traditional leaders. Because, I mean, I can cite, for example, myself. I had an assessment on my life that was done on my life when I became chairperson of the province, and the assessment came back and they said, no, my life was under threat. One must have security. We spoke to literally everybody. Even when I became the chairperson of the National House, we've been talking about the same thing, whether it was Notole, whether the minister, the deputy minister, the issue has been raised. Even when my uncle was killed at home, And they knew that I've been raising that issue, that our lives are under threat, you know. And we'll be told that, no, they will do another assessment. They do another assessment. It tells them that my life is under threat. But they will still not do anything about it, you know. So one has given up because, to rely on the police, be it the senior police that are responsible, or even the minister that is responsible for that. I mean, you have Ngosi Umkhatshwa Okhulile. They've killed so many people in a home. She said even to hire private security, because as much as they said their life is under threat, you know, the Department of Police, they just don't care. I mean, security is given to everybody except traditional leaders. And yet they are being killed on a daily basis, just like any other politician that is being killed. So it is a serious problem. We've raised it even with the presidency. We've literally raised it with everybody. But we have not found any joy around it. I mean, the DG can confirm, DG Shandu can confirm on the interventions that we've been trying to make, and we've been talking to literally everybody. But there is no, we are not finding any joy in that. And on traditional leaders, I think Kubakutulukulu asked about can traditional leaders expose illegal schools. I would set an example, Chair, that even myself, being chairperson of the House, there was an illegal school in my area. I reported it to the police. I even called Abu Paul trying to get help. I literally called everybody. And the police said, I must go to court and get a court order. And then they will then, but you know, they will then help me to arrest the person that is running an illegal school. You know, so I was saying, so what if people die there, you know, at that illegal school? So who becomes accountable? What happens? And I couldn't get help. I can give a witness. Well, it can be a witness with that, you know. And so we couldn't get help. So even traditional leaders that would report illegal schools in their areas, they would not get help. So we are excited that now there's this legislation. So we're hoping that this legislation empowers the enforcement officers to arrest those that must be arrested, you know. So, I think, Chair, my colleagues have covered most of the questions that have been asked, and I will pause here. But my parting shot would be that whatever we do, we need medical fraternity to come closer to us as a sector, and the department to look at the issue of compliance with negotiation. So that's my input. Thank you.
Before I allow, thank you, Chairperson Nkosi Mahlangu. Before I allow the colleagues to make follow-ups, in terms of the responses, I've just then pick up some very disturbing matters that I feel we need to address with you. Are we able to, number one, we are only told of 13 deaths that occurred. We are not told the number of initiates that were admitted during the December initiations course. And chairperson of the House and deputy chairperson. It's in this province where a number of young men get amputated. Because out of that number that you are going to be given to say, this is the number, I will satisfy that everybody that passed that school is well and healthy now, post that schooling initiation. That's what I'm trying to say. Because the numbers become very critical. And I'll agree with you that we need to to work with you to focus on this problem. It can't be that time and again lives get lost in that province. We're not going to allow that. So we need to be told also the names of these schools where these children died. Because I heard Inkosi Ndebu saying the three were shot. It was a criminal activity. I'll further ask Inkosi Ndebu, what is the status, the culprits, were they arrested? What is done to secure the security of this initiate while they're at the schools? That other 10, we are told they died of dehydration. This is a school. It's kids, and they're based on this thing to say they tell each other, Kuti, you don't drink water for you to heal quickly. But then I'm perturbed by this because when these boys are there, there are people who have gone through this process who are taking care of this. I don't want to get into the details because I normally remind me to say you are a woman, you can't be getting into the details. But common cause and logic tells me that there's somebody who will then be taking care of these boys, who will make sure that they drink water so that they don't get dehydrated. And then for us to come here and say that there's nobody who must take the responsibility, these boys on their own, they decided not to drink water and die and get. You are on record, Chairperson, to say also the health fraternity must come to the party. At the same time, we are told there's national initiation task teams in which these departments are involved. My understanding is that this also happened at province, at district level, even at those particular initiation schools. There should be these departments that are there that are also foreseeing that these things are happening. So really, because it's like this is a problem we must deal with, we are throwing it at us, and then we are not coming with the solution on how do we deal with it. Because the issue that you are saying, Inkosi Matlang, what to say, there was an illegal school, you told the police tell you to get a court order. Honestly, whereas it's an illegal school. Really, there's something that's not adding up here to say, are we forming structures for the sake of forming them? Because the colleagues at DTA National, you're telling us that SATS, NPA Health, Department of Arts and Culture yourself, and other departments are part of this national initiation task teams. But then, when you go down, it seems as if those structures don't exist. So are you operating in national, not even being concerned on what is happening on the ground, because that's where these things are happening. And then when we are told some departments are not coming to the party, can we be told which department? Because it's like you exist nationally, on the ground people do as they wish. Because also where I'm seated, yes, the role of a traditional surgeon, you know that doctors are held accountable should something go wrong with the patient. Where is the accountability here? You enter at your own risk, is what you are telling us. Though. Once you go there, you are entering at your own risk. Your life doesn't matter. If you come out, you are lucky. If you don't come out, then that's your own baby. And then if then the procedure doesn't go right, you get amputated, it's your own baby, is what you're actually telling us. But let me allow the other colleagues, Honorable Mkalipi's hand up. That's far, I'm only seeing him to Honorable Mkalipi.
No, Chair, I think I'm covered by some of the issues that you have raised because I wanted exactly to raise what you have just raised it here. So that's why I asked the department earlier on just to come clean because in some of the challenges that is there in the presentation, that's why I said to the department, can they just share us in details what are the broader strategy just to prevent what is, has been reported on their challenges? Because exactly what you are saying, Chair, it also seems as if there's no coordinated structure that is dealing with these issues. If the department is not coming clear and clean about the coordinated structure to prevent such debt. It means that even if we can have this bill that is waiting for the president to sign, we are still going to face with these challenges. That's why we need the department to assure us in this committee if it, indeed those committees are not just a decoration of the committee, but they are there to do their work. Because here, I think in the presentation, they put it in black and white to say that the initiation monitoring team in different provinces monitored initiation to ensure the closure of illegal initiation schools. So now we are being told that no, but they are still there, like we call. So now, therefore, the question arises, what is the role of these initiating monitoring teams then? Are they having some challenges as a team? And I agree with you, Chair, that no, in fact, we're supposed to have other stakeholders here in this meeting, your police, your Department of Health, even the province in terms of the department. They must come and account here because we are very worried. The second point that I want to raise, Chair, is that I was looking forward to, because it's only the department who tried to answer what I have raised in terms of the role of women in everything. And he was very simplistic. He was telling me about, you know, if a boy is taking a decision or it's time for the boy to go, the family sit down. We know those simplistic things. But I mean when the actual process is taking place. For instance, I can't be... It can't be that I have a boy who has to go to Ntabeni and then I'll just lessen my boy before he go to Ntabeni. I don't know what is happening there in Ntabeni. And according to the culture, I'm not allowed to know how is my boy doing. So I'm asking, especially in that processes that is taking place in Ntabeni. For instance, when I was listening to Inkosi Undive of Eastern Cape, trying to answer some of the things that we are raising here. It does not add up. It does not add up at all, Chairperson. It does not add up. And we need to be honest when we deal with these issues. Otherwise, if you are going to just reply or answer for the sake of replying, we are not going to get into the bottom of the challenges and we are not going to have some of the things that is raised here to be the So therefore, I need to hear from leaders. The department can just talk at a strategic level. It's their job to do that. Of course, we are not agreeing with all answers by the department, but we also rely to leaders. I was also very happy when the deputy chair of Makosi, Uma Mhlawulo, was also wanted to engage on some of the issues, because I thought she would also be answering things in the perspective of being a woman and parent in these instances. And she was correctly saying that Sinambabo Mama inganze to say I twala for 9 months, and it can be very easy for me to lose a child on the basis that no bakhulumile bodwa esikoleni and then bakhuhlisana, and then now we ask where is the role of the department, because as the chairperson, you are putting very correctly that no, in fact, na banda ba katalozengane if zila po schooling, okufuneka ba check ukuthi zile right yini and are they ready, which is they have to go under this circumcision and so on and so on. So if now we are being going to be told here, ukuthi no ba yakhohlisana mso schooling, ukuthi no, in order for you to heal very fast, funeke ube dehydrated and so on and so on. So now it comes to a point that the chair is raising. No, it means there's something that is missing between home and the school. So therefore, we are appealing to you because we also want to be part and parcel of the solution as members of the parliament as well to these problems in order to avoid the debt. So I'll strongly, strongly ask the leadership of Amakhosi Bakumahlangu and your delegation to come strong here and to be faithful and honest in order for us to come with a solution. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
To check if there's any other colleague who wants to make a follow-up. In the absence of any, let me allow Inkosi Ndevu to be, I think you want to respond to the issues to our conference. as we have raised them. Over to you, Nkosi Ndebu.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. One second. I think I must read the record by Chairperson of the National House, Ngozi Mahlangu. To say, Chair, maybe.